Hi, this is Dr. Margaret Paul, and I'm really pleased to be with you this evening for this webinar, a teleseminar on sexuality and intimacy. So I'm going to talk about sexuality and intimacy for a few minutes, and then I'm going to take questions and answer some of the questions that you typed in before the teleseminar. So sexuality tends to be a barometer for what's really going on in a relationship, but it's generally not the sexuality itself that's the problem. The sexuality is generally a result of something that's going on between two people, of a system that they're in that's not working. And the most common sexual problem that I deal with in the couples that I work with is where one person wants sex more than the other. And maybe you identify with that. One of the major issues that one or the other person comes into a relationship with is sexual addiction and using sex addictively. So what exactly is this? Both men and women can be sexually addicted or be using sex addictively, but it's actually more common in men. And what this means is that there's a wounded part of us that wants to get love. It means that in some way we're abandoning ourselves, we're not taking loving care of ourselves, and so we feel alone and empty inside, and we want something to fill up that emptiness. We want something or somebody to validate us, to make us feel okay. And when we're sexually addicted, it means that we turn to sex all the time to get this filled. Either we turn to a person or multiple people, we turn to pornography on the internet, to masturbation, to all kinds of other ways of trying to get filled up through sex. Using sex addictively means that we just do that less often, that occasionally or perhaps once a week or a couple times a week rather than every day, we're turning to sex to try and fill up the emptiness inside, the bad feelings, the aloneness that come from our own self-abandonment. So sexual addiction is like any other addiction. We have many, many addictions in our society, whether it's food or alcohol or drugs or work or gambling or TV or whatever, yelling at people, trying to control others. Sex is just one of the addictions that's very, very common in our society. When we're actually being loving to ourselves, we're being a loving adult, and the loving adult part of us wants to share love rather than get love. It's a very, very different energy. And problems occur in relationships when two people get together and they're not taking responsibility for loving themselves and therefore having love to share. And so they're both coming from an empty place. One of those people might be sexually addicted, and which means that you're turning to another person to fill you. That other person may also come from an emptiness inside and be needing love, and so that person may give themselves up and go along with it as a way to get love. But after a while, that person ends up feeling used, as the person who's sexually addicted is definitely using them to try and fill up that emptiness. And so obviously, it creates a big problem in relationships. I'm just going to give an instruction again. Those of you that just got on the phone, if you will press star 6 to mute, and when we're ready to take questions, you can press star 7. So this is the major kind of system that occurs in relationships, where one person may be using sex to get filled and get validated. The other person may be giving themselves up and going along with it to get filled, but in the meantime, that person is slowly getting turned off in the relationship, because that relationship doesn't lead to very connected feelings. Now, of course, there's other issues in relationships, even if there's no addiction. there may be biological differences that happen between men and women. Men tend to have more testosterone than women, which is what creates a deeper sense of sexuality or deeper desire. Women often, not always, tend to get turned on when there's romance, whereas very often men are just turned on because of their biology. And so when there's a difference here, that can also cause conflict between people, where a man may not understand that the woman's biology is not the same as his, and that she may need romance in order to get turned on. And this is true whether it's a gay relationship or a heterosexual relationship. There may be biological differences in either case. However, when there's love, people tend to find a way to get their needs met. They care about themselves. They care about each other. They care about the differences between them. They care that maybe one person needs more romance, or that, or one person is more biologically motivated, and they care about these things, and they're able to work them out when there's not a power struggle, when there's not sexual addiction going on. But when the wounded self is in charge and there's an addiction, then it becomes very, very difficult to resolve these kinds of biological differences. Now, one of the major issues that I see is where one or both people have a lack of sexual desire. Now, when it's both people that have a lack of sexual desire, it's often not a problem. They're fine. They're happy with a companionship relationship. Neither of them are very sexually motivated. It's not a problem for them. Sometimes they may be judging themselves. They may be saying, well, we should have more sex. But in reality, they're not that sexually motivated. They care about each other. They love each other. They have a good time. They learn. They grow. It's just not a lot of sexual energy going on, or they may have young children and they're tired and they're busy. And that's not actually a problem. But when one person is wanting sex and another doesn't, another has a lack of sexual desire, that's when it can become a problem. And there's a number of things that create a lack of sexual desire. One of them is a lack of emotional intimacy. As I said, some people, and actually both men and women, may need emotional intimacy in order to feel turned on. Many people just don't get turned on by the physical act of sex. They need to feel emotionally connected to the person. And if you're not spending time together, you're not sharing yourselves with each other, then there's no real emotional connection, and there may be a lack of sexual desire. Another reason may be a feeling of a lack of safety, that you don't feel like you can speak up for yourself in the relationship, that you find if you do tell your truth, you get yelled at or judged or put down. That's not a turn-on. It's not a turn-on when you can't speak your truth, share what's going on with you without repercussions, without getting judged or put down or yelled at or ignored, or you know, some negative consequence for sharing what's going on with you. So a lack of safety is a reason for a lack of sexual desire. And then another reason is when you give yourself up in the relationship, not just sexually, but you give yourself up in other areas of the relationship. You go along with what your partner wants, and you're not tuning into what you want, and you're basically giving yourself up to try and have control over that other person. You're going to tend to lose your sexual desire. When we give ourselves up, it's like something in us shuts down, and we tend to lose sexual desire. And then another reason for a lack of sexual desire is feeling repelled by another person's neediness. If your partner is sexually addicted, or if your partner is abandoning him or herself emotionally and coming from a very needy place and pulling on you for sex in order to get filled, in order to get validated, that's pretty much of a turnoff. And this can happen with both men and women. When one person is needy and pulling and demanding that the other person make love to them and demanding that they be loved by the other, that's pretty much of a turnoff. There's nothing erotic about that. And finally, there may be physical reasons for a lack of sexual desire. There may be low testosterone. There may be illness. There may be tiredness due to children. There may be reasons like that that lead to low sexual desire. Now, of course, there can be other problems in relationships. There can be a lack of orgasm. In fact, many, many women tend to fake orgasm in relationships because they're worried that their partner is going to be upset if they don't. And this does not lead to an honest and open and good sexual relationship. There may be problems of impotency and premature ejaculation. These problems, you may need some sexual therapy, although oftentimes these are rooted, again, in a lack of emotional connection, but they can be resolved with compassion. Sometimes impotency and premature ejaculation are symptoms of a fear of engulfment. If you experience your wife, your partner as controlling. So these are all issues that can be addressed, they can be resolved, but only when people are truly open to learning. Only when they're in compassion for themselves and in compassion for each other. This is what we call inner bonding, the loving adult. The loving adult who really wants to learn about what it means to be loving to oneself and loving to one's partner. It's when we move into that deep intention to learn and take responsibility for our own feelings and for being in compassion for ourselves and each other, that's when all of these problems can get resolved. Some people often ask me, many couples often ask me, can we keep the romance alive? Can we keep the passion alive in a long-term relationship? And the answer is yes, you can. There are many people that do. But the way that I have seen that happen is when there's continual newness in the relationship. And the newness means that it's learning, it's growing, it's a spiritually evolving relationship. That's what creates the aliveness to keep the passion alive. Without that intention to learn, without a loving adult who really wants to learn about loving oneself and loving the other person, there isn't going to be newness in the relationship. And the aliveness and the passion that you had at the beginning is not going to stay alive and passionate when one or both of you are not open to learning. Now, this is really what inner bonding is about. It's about learning how to develop that loving adult so that you can stay open to learning, that you can want to learn and grow, that you're not afraid to look inside, that you are taking responsibility for your own feelings. This has a huge impact on the sexual relationship. I've worked with thousands of couples over the last 40-plus years. Many of them came to me. They hadn't had sex in a long, long time. And as I work with each of them on taking responsibility for themselves, moving out of their addictive behavior, learning how to love themselves, learning how to fill themselves up with love so that they have love to share, these couples move back into a satisfying sexual relationship, even if they haven't had sex for many years. And so I've just seen over and over again how this can be resolved when people are willing to learn and grow and learn to take responsibility for themselves, for loving themselves, so that they're filled with love and they have love to share with each other. Now, there's a number of ways of learning the inner bonding process. One is to become a member of our website, which is very, very supportive of people learning. You can learn through books, you can learn through facilitation, through workshops, through intensives. There's many ways of learning inner bonding. I really want to encourage those of you that are listening to think about becoming members if you're not already a member, because it's extremely supportive of learning the inner bonding process. So I'm going to move into some questions now. Now, we have two ways of taking questions. One is that some of you have written in questions, and I'm going to answer some of those. And the other is that there's many of you on the line tonight, and you may also have questions. And so if you have a question right now and you're online, you can push star 7, and you can ask your question. So I'm wondering if there's anybody online right now that would like to ask me a question. Anybody there like to add? There's a lot of people online, so I'd like to know if any of you would like to personally ask me a question, and I can do a little bit of work with you, or if not, I'll just go on and answer some questions. Hello? You press star 7?
Okay, I'll give it a try. Hello, everybody. My name's Mark.
Hi, Mark.
I just was late, and I was thinking, you know, why am I late? There's a part of me that wants to make me late often, and maybe there's something unconscious that made me kind of go into a mild disassociated state before this time came, and then I somehow feel there's something going on about me being late. It's not only tonight.
Well, lateness, Mark, is often a sign of resistance, so I'm wondering if there's something that you're afraid of, something that you're resisting. Can you look aside for a moment and see?
Yeah, generally it's maybe if I belong to something or I'm connected to something, either I get swallowed up or I lose myself or
right.
I become enslaved and then I rebel and I don't want to lose, like, fused and become too regressed and become, you know what I mean? Like, I want my independence. Yeah.
Right. So, Mark, you're suffering from a deep fear of engulfment. This is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, you have a deep fear of engulfment.
Right. You probably had a very controlling parent, and you've learned to resist. And being late is a form of resistance. So let me just do a little bit of work. This is a deep problem, Mark, and it's not going to be solved in just a few minutes on the phone. But here's what I want to share with you about a fear of engulfment. It can certainly affect every relationship you're in, every intimate relationship, every sexual relationship, because it comes up a lot. And what happens is that the wounded part of you thinks that the way to be safe from being controlled by somebody is to resist, is to not do what you think you're supposed to do or not do what somebody else wants you to do. The problem with this is that there's a delusion going on in the wounded self. Anytime we either comply or resist, either one, we're being controlled by the other person or by the situation, because in neither case, whether it's compliance or resistance, are we tuning into what we want. So, for example, before the call, Mark, did you actually tune in and say, do I want to be on time or do I not want to be on time? Did you tune into that?
Originally, I did tune in and say, look, this is the now, the childhood stuff's over. I want to be a mature adult and do the adult type thing.
No, but did you tune in and say that you either want to be on time or you don't want to be on time?
No, I wanted to. I did. I tuned in and says I want to be on time, and I scheduled it. I gave myself time to be at home in time to make the call and so on. You know.
Okay, but it doesn't sound like that by the time you actually tuned in to the call, that there was an adult in charge. By the time you actually made the call, it was your wounded self who was in charge.
Yes.
And who wanted to resist, even being controlled by the time. You know, we can say to ourselves, see, some wounded part of you can say, I want to be on time, and another wounded part of you says, you can't make me, I don't have to do what you say.
Yes.
And so even if you think you're wanting to be on time, that's not necessarily a loving adult part of you that's making that decision. Because any time you're even resisting what you think you want, it means that it's not an adult who's making the decision. Now, it takes time, Mark, to develop an adult. It doesn't just happen. It takes, I mean, this is what inner bonding is about. Inner bonding is like the workout. It's the practice for developing an adult who is really able to take loving action for yourself so that the fear of engulfment isn't there. Right now, that fear is there. That fear of being controlled either by yourself, your own authoritarian wounded self, or being controlled by somebody else, is still there, Mark. And I want to suggest right now, as a beginning to dealing with this, that you try and move into deep compassion for that part of you that is trying to control you and trying to resist that control. That's your wounded self.
Yeah, but that's like saying to a baby who, like a starving guy in the desert who needs water and there's no water, oh, I'll just drink it. I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
so in your mind, you don't have the capacity to move into compassion?
Something like that.
Right now? Okay, Mark,
basically,
you know what? This is going to be a much deeper issue. If you feel that you don't have the capacity to move into compassion, I really suggest that you contact me for some inner bonding facilitation, either with me or one of the other inner bonding facilitators, because this is probably not a problem that you're going to be able to deal with on your own. And so somebody needs to press *6 and mute themselves so that we can't hear what's going on in the background.
Okay.
So, Mark, I really want to suggest that you get
some
help with this.
Gotcha.
Because I don't think that you're going to be able to deal with this on your own. Okay? So I'm going to take a question from the list that that people wrote in. Why do I lose interest in sex if I'm still in love with my partner and I still find him very attractive? It's a very common problem and a very common question that people have. And I think I sort of addressed it, but I'm going to address it again here. You can be very in love with your partner. You can find your partner very attractive. But if in the interaction between the two of you, there's any kind of pull or demand making you responsible for his feelings, you feeling like you have to have sex in order for him to be okay, that you feel used at all sexually, that there's not an emotional connection happening, you're going to lose interest in sex, even though you're in love with your partner. This is a very, very common dynamic. So it's important to take a look at whether or not you're feeling pulled on by your partner. Because just like with Mark going into sort of an automatic resistance, and this woman's name is Ara. Ara, you may be going into an automatic resistance to a pull that your partner has, that if he's making you responsible for him in any way, you're going to feel that pull. You're going to go into an automatic resistance because there's nothing that's a turn-on about that. Okay, is there somebody else online? You can press *7 who would like to ask a question. If not, I'll move on to one of these others. Okay, so Diane asks, if I heal my inner child, will I still need a relationship with someone else? Now, this also is a very common question that I get. There's a huge misunderstanding about what relationships are all about. The wounded self believes that a relationship is about getting love. But really, what a relationship is about sharing love. And the more you heal yourself, the more you learn to take responsibility for your own feelings, the more love you have to share. And we are not people, we are social beings. We don't like living in isolation. And the more love we have inside, the more we want to share that love. So absolutely, you will still need a relationship. You will need a relationship to learn, to grow, to play, to have companionship, to share love and intimacy and passion and aliveness, all the wonderful things that relationships offer. What you won't need a relationship for is to take care of your inner child, is to take responsibility for your feelings, is to fill you up and make you feel safe and secure. That's your job. And so the more you practice inner bonding and the more you learn to fill yourself up and take responsibility for your own feelings, actually the more you're going to look forward to having a truly loving relationship with somebody. Okay, is there anybody else online that would like to ask a question? Okay, I'll go on to another question. Joni says, I'm 60 and I've been married for 39 years. I'm in recovery in OA, and I'm learning more about how my resentments have affected my relationship. Things are better in general, but I'm completely shut down sexually. I have no desire for intimacy with my spouse. Have I just not truly dealt with my resentments towards my husband? He is a very reactive person, and people have told me they don't know how I put up with how nastily he talks to me when he's upset. I thought I was able to forgive and forget, but at a deeper level, I must still be stuck. My body image is not good, even though I've lost weight, but I think it's more about not trusting my partner anymore because I never know when he's going to be hurtful, although never physically. Am I still just too sensitive? Joni, no, this is not at all about being too sensitive. As I said earlier, there's no way to really be turned on to somebody when you don't feel safe, when you're afraid that he's going to be reactive and he's going to be nasty. What is there to be turned on to? That's not fun. That's not a turn on when you are worried when he's going to be reactive and you never know. You don't trust him because you never know when he's going to be hurtful. This is what you said. Now, you can't separate sexuality from that. You know, there's a part of you inside that has a lot of heartache over this. You're obviously doing a lot of work. You're working on yourself. You're trying to heal yourself. You're losing weight. You're in recovery. Doesn't sound like your husband is, and that says that there's a lot of heartache in you about his nastiness, his lack of openness, his lack of caring and connection to you. That's not being too sensitive at all. That's the reality of the situation. And it's very unrealistic to expect yourself to feel sexual towards somebody who's treating you badly. That's just really the way it is. Not that way for everybody, but for you, that's really the way it is. And I suggest that instead of thinking that there's something wrong with you, like you're too sensitive, that you accept that that's really the situation. Okay. Is there anybody online that would like to ask a question? Okay, then I'm going to go on here. Is it good to talk deeply about everything with your partner? Deep, deep therapeutic talk. Women love this, but sometimes men don't. Don't healthy men open up to deep, deep intimate sharing? Or I guess I could say a man who doesn't want to talk a lot, is he more shut down? No, not necessarily. Many women tend to think that a good relationship is more of a therapeutic relationship. In reality, that's not necessarily a good relationship. A good relationship is not a relationship of processing and processing, and it's not a therapeutic relationship. That's for therapy. That's not for partnership. And very often men don't like to talk because they feel put on the spot or they feel blamed. They feel like the woman wants to talk because she's unhappy and she's blaming him for it. I'm unhappy because you're shut down, or I'm unhappy because you're not communicating with me, or I'm unhappy because you're not letting me on your feelings, and there's a lot of blame going on. Now, that's not fun. It's not fun to talk. So if you're a woman and you want to talk more, talk about yourself. Talk about your own feelings. Talk about your own learning and your own growth. And see if when you open a conversation like that, you can be very, very accepting of where your partner is. And if he is not wanting to talk, there's got to be good reasons for it. And trying to make him talk to you is only going to make him feel unsafe and not want to talk. Now, if you're a man and you're feeling shut down and you don't feel like talking, you might want to take a look inside and see, you know, what's really going on. Are you feeling blamed? Are you afraid of saying the wrong thing? Does it seem more like an interrogation? Does it seem like you're more on the spot rather than a real sharing of who you each are? I work with a lot of men, and I don't find them to be actually very shut down. The men that I work with, of course, they're wanting to do their work. But many men come to my workshops, my intensives. When they feel safe, they're open. I think that's true of most of us. When we feel safe, we're open. When we feel unsafe, we're not open. And so the more you practice inner bonding and the more you take responsibility for your own feelings, the more your partner is going to feel safe, and the more you're naturally going to be communicating with each other. Okay, now anybody who does want to ask a question, if you will press star 7. If you're muted, you will unmute yourself by pressing star 7. Is there anybody else who would like to do a little bit of work with me and ask a question? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Yeah, hi. Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead. What's your name, honey?
My name's Margaret.
Okay, Margaret. Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. My question is, and I'm probably thinking too hard about how to word this in a way that I'm wondering, is there a healthy ballpark type of, I mean, of course it's when you're feeling connected that you want to be intimate, but is there a healthy number range for a couple that's been married 4 years being intimate? Like, would you say once a week, once a month?
You know, it's so variable, and it so depends upon the two people. It so depends upon the circumstances, whether there's children involved, how much work each person needs to do, what's going on in the relationship, how close you feel to each other, what your sex drives are. So I don't think it's really appropriate to say, well, we should be having sex, you know, once a week or twice a week, or we should be at least having sex once a month. I don't think it's helpful to label things like that. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about your situation. What are you concerned about?
Not so much concern, just wondering. You know, we do have a 3-year-old, and we're working with getting his, tonight was a success. We got him down in time for the call.
Okay.
But on creating more time for us. But
now, is one of you wanting sex more than the other?
Honey, are you? He's listening. He's on the call with me.
Okay. I mean, is this a problem where it seems like one of you is wanting it more often than the other, or are you both concerned that you're not having it often enough, or what's the concern here?
And again, I don't know if there's really a concern. It's more of just like a curiosity of, I mean, things have certainly changed since we have a child.
Right.
And a lot of times it just seems like we're both, you know, physically just so tired at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, and that's normal when you have a child, that you're kind of wiped out.
Yeah, yeah.
And especially with a young child, especially a child like 3 years old, it's, you know, you're kind of wiped out, and it's hard to have the energy.
So it's okay, you know, a month goes by.
A month goes by, yes, a month goes by.
Something.
Yeah, honey, it is okay. It's the way it is right now. It won't always be that way.
Okay.
There will be a time when you have more time and when you have more energy. If you're planning on having more children, that time may not be too soon. But that is the way it is. It's hard when people are working as hard as they are, when they have young children. It's really hard. Sexuality comes when you're relaxed, when you have time for each other, when you've been able to maybe go out to dinner and relax and talk and get close and share. And then, you know, in that atmosphere, you start to feel the sexual energy between you. But, you know, when you've been working and you're exhausted and taking care of a child, it doesn't just happen.
Right.
It doesn't just, you know, it's not just there. There's no time for it. There's no energy for it. So, you know, if a month goes by and you're not having sex, and neither of you are actually complaining about it. See, if one of you is complaining about it, then it becomes a problem. But if neither of you are actually complaining about it, if you're just looking at each other and saying, my God, we're just too tired, and we just don't seem to, you know, have the time or space for it, it's okay. It's okay. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with your relationship.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
How
is
do
there
I,
anybody else who would like to ask a question?
How do I mute again?
You mute with star 6.
Thank you.
Star 6 mutes, star 7 unmutes.
Okay, thank you.
So, is there somebody else who would like to ask a question?
Can you hear me, Dr. Margaret?
Yes. Yes. And
Hi.
What is your name? Hi.
My name is Carol. I just was wondering, how do I get past this wall I have up of not wanting to be involved sexually or intimately altogether? Like, I don't know how to go through the inner bonding process and just kind of let go of whatever baggage I have.
Okay. So would you take a moment right now and just tune in to that part of you that really does not want to be sexual?
I guess it's more of a fear of intimacy more than a fear of sexuality.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's similar to a person who called earlier about his fear of engulfment.
Yes.
Or fear of abandonment. It's like a combination for me.
Okay, so when you tune inside, there's a fear of intimacy. It may be both a fear of rejection and abandonment, and it may be a fear of engulfment. Is that what you're tuning into?
Yes.
Okay. So when there's not a loving adult in charge, that fear is there in most people. A fear that if they get intimate with somebody, they're either going to lose themselves or they're going to lose the other person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's very scary. And that fear, those fears, those are the bottom line fears of the wounded part of us, of losing the other person and or losing ourselves. The inner bonding process is the most powerful process I know for healing this, because when you actually are being a loving adult, which means that you would be setting appropriate limits against losing yourself. You would know how to speak up for yourself in a relationship and how to say yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no, and not giving yourself up to control somebody so that you wouldn't be losing yourself. And you are not rejecting yourself. You're bringing a tremendous amount of love into yourself. You're valuing yourself. You're taking action for yourself. You're not handing your inner child over to somebody else to validate and to love, so that then there's no fear of rejection. When we're not rejecting ourselves, when we're not abandoning ourselves, when we're truly there for ourselves, not taking other people's behavior personally, and doing our own inner work in the face of what others do, not making others responsible for our feelings, we then are no longer afraid of rejection. And so when, and this takes time, this doesn't just happen. This is the inner bonding process, that the more you practice truly loving and valuing yourself, the more you show up as that loving adult, you find that your fear of intimacy gradually goes away.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, so does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. It does.
Okay, so I really want to encourage you to learn and practice the inner bonding process.
Okay. I'll just keep practicing. Thank you.
Okay. Some of you need to press star 6 to mute yourself, because we can hear you in the background. And then you press star 7 when you have a question to ask.
Okay. So I really want to encourage you to learn and practice the inner bonding process.
Boy, I'm getting a feedback. Isn't that strange? Okay. So is there anybody else that that would like to ask a question?
I would.
Okay. And what's your name, Annie?
Stephanie.
Okay, Stephanie. You go ahead.
Okay.
with my, I guess the first sexual relationship, which was a long time ago with someone I was, you know, really in love with, I found out at the end that he had been cheating on me.
Yeah.
With his ex-girlfriend. And
okay.
He told me that, you know, he would think about her while he was intimate with me.
Yes.
And since then, I've had a really hard time feeling safe sexually with people. Like, it's,
yeah.
I keep wondering if that's what's going on with them. That sort of, like, haunted me in a way that, you know, is interfering, I guess, with my romantic life. And I'm not really sure how to deal with that. I know it's
so Stephanie, when you found this out, that he was doing this, that he was cheating on you and thinking about his ex-girlfriend, do you remember what you told yourself about that? What did you say to yourself that made you feel really bad and unsafe?
I think I was just in shock because I had no idea. It was so scary that could be going on, and I thought he was in love with me.
Right.
And to realize that wasn't the case and this whole other thing was going on was really scary. I remember that.
Well, but I think that on another level it was even more than scary. When something like that happens, it's a deep kind of heartbreak.
Yeah.
You know, to find out that somebody hasn't been honest, somebody has been cheating in this way, somebody who you thought loved you didn't. There's a kind of heartbreak that goes on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what becomes the fear, is that when you don't know how to manage the feeling of heartbreak, then you get really, really afraid of having your heart broken again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's
one,
true.
Pardon me?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And so one of the things that needs to happen here, honey, is that you, again, you need to practice, you need to learn and practice the inner bonding process, develop the loving adult who learns how to nurture, how to handle feelings of heartbreak. Because they're very, very difficult feelings. They're feelings that we certainly cannot manage as little children. And what we do as children is we find addictive ways of shutting down, of avoiding. And so when this happened for you, it probably tapped into old heartbreak that you might not even remember, because we all have it as children, and we learn to avoid those feelings by taking things personally, by staying in our heads, by different forms of addiction. What's happening here is that you're avoiding being in love again because you're afraid of the possibility of heartbreak. And the problem is there's always that possibility. There's always that, whether somebody's going to cheat on you or somebody you love dies or somebody you love just, you know, loses interest or whatever. That can happen. And so there's never any guarantee that if we love somebody, if we open our heart and we love somebody, that our heart isn't going to get hurt. And in order to really be open, you have to be willing for that to happen. And in order for you to be willing for that to happen, you need to know how to manage the feelings of heartbreak. And that's where inner bonding comes in.
But doesn't she also, wouldn't it be helpful, maybe, just an idea, just curious, you know, if she acknowledged that maybe this guy objectified her, and then she can label it. She can go, oh, okay, well, that's what's going on. I was objectified.
I don't think he objectified me.
And then, well, I mean.
Yes, and but that's still heartbreaking, you see. Yes, it's very important for her not to take it personally because his actions were about him. They weren't really about her at all. They were about his neediness, his acting out. So, yes, it's very important not to take them personally. But it's equally important to open to that level of heartbreak with deep compassion and deep understanding that this can happen. It certainly helps to do that if you don't take it personally. And I think that's very, very important for you to get that his behavior had nothing to do with you. And you actually had no way of knowing this was your first relationship. I mean, after a while of dating and meeting people, we kind of start to tune in to when somebody is coming from an empty place inside. But at that point, I'm sure you had no way of knowing that this guy was coming from a needy place and using women to fill up that neediness. And so you were shocked by it. You had no way of knowing that this was going to happen. And that's very heartbreaking for you. But I can assure you that if you start to practice the inner bonding process and you learn to show up for yourself as an adult, that fear will go away. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, because I haven't been able to open up to love since, too, which I'm concerned about, and I do sabotage, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it has been a problem, and it's frustrating that this person who's now on his second marriage is not, you know, affected in this, but, you know, I have, you know, for all these years. But the fear, too, of, like, you don't know what's going on in somebody's head. And I don't know if that's something that would make me controlling by wanting to know, or if that's something that will go away if I heal this. Or, you know, I'm concerned about that.
You know,
that.
Honey, it's not a matter of knowing what's going on in somebody's head. It's a matter of tuning into the energy. You don't have to know what's going on in somebody's head. What you do need to know is you have to be open to your own feelings, because your own feelings are an inner guidance system. And your own feelings will tell you a tremendous amount about the energy of another person, whether they're truly loving, whether they're needy, whether they're empty. Like I said, you didn't know how to do that at that time. But if you start to practice inner bonding, not only do you get in touch with your own feelings, but you can really very quickly tune into what's going on energetically with another person. And also, when you practice inner bonding, you're learning to tune into your own higher guidance. We all have guidance around us, and people who practice inner bonding learn to access their personal guidance, which is a vast, vast source of incredible information. And when you learn to tune into that kind of higher self knowing, as well as tuning into your inner guidance, which is your feelings, it really becomes easy to discern what's going on with the person. Like if you were to really start to practice inner bonding and really develop that inner guidance and that higher guidance, and you were to meet that person or that kind of person after practicing the process for, you know, a good period of time, you probably wouldn't even have been interested in that guy, because you would have discerned the emptiness that's there. You would have discerned the neediness, and you wouldn't have found him attractive, because on the energy level, you would have tuned into it. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. The part that is still, the other part that's hard for me still, and I've probably been too hard on myself about it, is I just don't, like, I have felt as loved as I did in any of my, you know, relationships since, as I did by him. So I don't understand how I really
okay, so,
find
so that,
self
that gives me that, Stephanie, that gives me another clue. You might want to pick up a book called Help, I'm in Love with a Narcissist. It may be very, very enlightening for you, because men who are narcissistic know exactly how to make a woman feel deeply, deeply in love with them. They know exactly how charming to be, what to say, how to make you feel like you're the most special, most important person in the whole world. If you were to read that book, Help, I'm in Love with a Narcissist, you might really, really get a good idea of what went on here. And men who know how to do that, who know how to make you feel so, so, so special and so, so loved, also men who are doing that as a manipulation, because there's this deep neediness going on, which leads them to go after other women as well. So I really want to encourage you to learn about that. It could be extremely helpful to you in getting over this. And truly, anybody can be pulled in by somebody who's narcissistic and very, very good at being that loving, that charming, that present, that you know, that makes you feel so special and loved. Anybody can be pulled in by that. But it's important, if you read that book, you're going to start to know what the signs are of a man who's like that. And the fact that you haven't felt loved like that again is also an indication of your needing to learn inner bonding and learn how to give yourself the kind of love that he gave you. Because otherwise you're still going to be very, very vulnerable to somebody coming along and acting like that. And so I really want to encourage you to read that book. Okay?
Yeah, that would help. And how normal is it to be thinking about somebody else, you know, while you're with somebody else? Like, is that something that I just took personally, you think? Or if you really are with somebody, it's possible to just be present with them while you're in bed with them?
Well, I mean,
like
obviously
that's
what you want. You want to be with somebody who is capable of being present with you. Right?
Is that too high of an expectation?
No, that's not too high an expectation. Absolutely not. You don't want to be with somebody who has to think about somebody else in order to have sex. That person is not going to be a good partner for you. That person is not capable of true intimacy, not capable of really being present, not capable of love. That is an indication of a dysfunction that's going on.
Okay.
That person is protecting against the intimacy.
Okay.
But it has nothing to do with you.
And
if you want a truly intimate relationship, then that's it. Then you need to be doing your inner work and become truly intimate with yourself. And then you wouldn't settle for somebody who does that.
Well, it didn't feel like I was settling. Like, it really felt fun and exciting.
I understand that. That's why I'm encouraging you to read this book.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Is it possible, I was going to add something, is it possible that she could have really core abandonment issues if someone you bonded with deeply emotionally was just bailed out on you? It sounds like there's deep abandonment from childhood that you could address with inner bonding and the loving adult.
It's possible that it could have triggered deep abandonment from childhood. But in either case, whether it's abandonment from childhood or whether it's currently being left by somebody, the real issue is still self-abandonment as an adult. That's what heals old abandonment is no longer abandoning oneself in the present. What heals old abandonment is learning how to be that loving adult for your own inner child so that you don't feel abandoned by other people. See, abandonment is something that can happen when we're children. We can't take care of ourselves. We can be abandoned if we're old, if we're sick. Abandonment is something we do to somebody who we're responsible for and who cannot take responsibility for themselves. But in a normal adult relationship, people say all the time, well, I felt abandoned by him or I felt abandoned by her. But you see, we can only abandon somebody who can't take care of themselves. And so that's not actually abandonment. That's just leaving. But as an adult, we are the ones who abandon ourselves. We're responsible for that child. We're responsible for our feelings with him. And we can abandon ourselves. And so whenever we feel abandoned as an adult, it's not coming from the other person. It's not even coming from the past. It's coming from how we're treating ourselves. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Good. Okay. Does anybody else have a question you'd like to ask? Okay,
hey, Dr.
I have many. Pardon me?
Yeah, can I a quick one? A quick one about mirroring, the need for mirroring, how that works, what that is, do we need it?
We need to be mirroring ourselves. We needed mirroring as a child, and if we didn't get it, we cannot expect somebody else to be doing that for us. We need to be doing it for ourselves. The loving adult needs to mirror the child inside.
How does that work? What does that mean to mirror someone?
It means that you're tapping into a higher source of truth about who you really are in your essence, and you're letting that essence, like if you had an actual child and you were saying to that child, you were mirroring who they really are, their sense of humor, their kindness, their creativity, their particular form of intelligence, their sweetness, their generosity. A loving parent would mirror that, would say, oh, you know, my heart warms to how kind you were in that situation. That's mirroring. Well, we do the same thing with ourselves. We notice who we really are on the essence level, our true selves. This is part of what you learn to do in the inner bonding process. We tune into our higher guidance. We get to know who we are in our essence, and we mirror that to ourselves. Okay, I'm going to take one more question here. We have about another 5 minutes, and I'm going to read one that a person wrote in. Sometimes with my husband, I feel like we are merely having sex without emotional involvement. Other times it feels like we are making love and we are aligned physically as well as emotionally. I have a sense afterward about the difference in my feelings. I wonder how I can sense where we are ahead of time so that we are more in alignment. So once again, you see, if you practice the inner bonding process, it means that you learn to be more and more in touch with your feelings in the moment rather than after the fact. And in a case like this, if you were practicing inner bonding, you would be tuning in to how you felt emotionally with your husband before you made love. And you would be able to tune in to see whether or not you were feeling connected with him before making love, rather than just going ahead and making love and hit or miss, that, you know, that sometimes it's going to be great because you're emotionally connected, and other times it's going to be lousy because you're not emotionally connected, and then you realize it afterwards. So, you know, a major part of the inner bonding process is learning to stay present in our bodies, tuned into our feelings, in touch with the energy between us and another person, so that you know ahead of time that you are emotionally connected and this is a wonderful time to make love, or you know ahead of time that you're not emotionally connected, then you could take some action. You could say, you know, let's sit down and talk for a while. Let's take a walk. Let's have dinner together. Let's take a bath together or whatever, and do something to create the emotional connection. If you want to make love but you're not feeling it, there's certainly things that you can do to create it. So let's see. I think I have time for one more question here. How to deal with the challenges of a 10-year relationship that has become a no-sex zone, and the initiating partner is not yet ready after more than a year to explore causes, impacts, or solutions. Now, I'm not clear what you mean by the initiating partner, but it sounds like that you're saying that you don't have sex, and that your partner is not interested in exploring why you don't have sex. So you can't make the other person be open, and on all you can do is deal with your own feelings. There may be, you know, heartache about that. You may need to really nurture that. You may need to explore your end of the relationship, what you may be doing that may be participating, that, you know, you may be, maybe you're the needy one, maybe you're pulling, maybe there's control going on. You would need to be exploring your end of the system and be taking care of your feelings and be moving more and more into a loving adult for yourself. My experience in working with couples for so many years is that when one person decides to do their inner work and one person decides to change the system, the whole system can change. So even if your partner isn't going to deal with themselves, isn't going to explore what the problem is, you can make a huge difference in the relationship by taking responsibility for your own feelings, and by learning about your end of the system, what you need to do to be more loving to yourself, what you need to do to be more loving to your partner, all of that makes a huge, huge difference, and you might find the sexual problem just magically resolving once you're dealing with your end of the system. Okay, well, I want to thank all of you for joining the call today, and I want to encourage you once again to check out our membership website. We have free 7 days. I hope that you have all taken our 7-day course. We have a free inner bonding course. We also have 7 free days on the membership site. The membership itself is only $14.95 a month, which I think is the best deal in town because you have access to me and Dr. Erica all the time with your questions, to the chats that we are on, to forums. There's so many ways of getting support with your inner bonding process. So I encourage all of you to check out the site. And once again, thank you for being a part of this. And I send blessings to all of you.
Thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Good night.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Margaret.